Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem, the Power of Words, Shir number 90. We are talking about the consequences of verbal abuse. And I do want to say that most of us don't consider ourselves verbal abusers. And it's possible that, generally speaking, we are not. There's some people that are chronically abusive verbally. And we have to look at ourselves in the mirror and see if we tend to be this way or that we are this way. But even those of us that are not, then generally not, but all of us from time to time, whether we're frustrated, defensive, angry, whatever it is, we do hurtful words, basically. So the idea of the word verbal abuse, it's spread out around there. Maybe people are hypersensitive. Anytime you give them even a constructive criticism, they'll yell and scream, oh, it's verbal abuse. You have this in the liberal culture these days, especially in the United States right now. But the idea being, though, in the Torah-based concept of it, objectively, when you over loisainu ishes amisai of the Torah, that act of loisainu is a verbal abuse. So there's a poem by Robert Browning that said that about smiling, that a person smiles, and then it said in this poem, I gave commands, then all smiles stopped together. The giving commands and the smiles stop, and there she stands as if alive. It's a powerful quote. As if alive, because it takes away the life force of a person when they're hurt by words. One of our greatest needs is to be understand and also to be understood. And when you're in that relationship where this verbal abuse is taking place, the need of the spouse to understand and to be understood is not met. It's not met. And when they are understood and understand each other, that's a healthy relationship. And when a spouse is always abusive, the one who is the victim of it cannot come and figure out and even comprehend. It's almost incomprehensible, some of those behaviors, to the person who is the recipient of it. Some of the consequences of these verbal abuse situations is that the one who is the recipient of it all of a sudden will distrust their spontaneity. There'll be a loss of enthusiasm. They'll always be on guard. There's an uncertainty about how they themselves come across. They think there's something wrong with them. They go soul-searching and review incidents, hoping to determine what did I do that went wrong. A loss of self-confidence, growing self-doubt, an internal critical voice in them, a concern, why am I not more happy than I ought to be? There's an anxiety of or fear of being crazy, or that they're missing something, or that they're going to be labeled too sensitive, or they start doubting their own perceptions, or they have now reluctance to come to conclusions. They want to run away, and they tend to live in the future. Oh, everything will be good when this and this happens. And there's a distrust of future relationships. All this happens when the loisainu is violated b'kfiyas as a set thing. Verbal abuse is damaging to the spirit. Now, in some situations, of course, it's brought down that if a person's able to overcome this and not let it affect them, it's mechaper averus, and you're tefillis. You could even give brachis. Then there's many stories, Chaim Kineski and others, where someone was embarrassed terribly, and they asked them for brachis because if they were quiet and didn't respond, they get tremendous brachis. But again, we can't go along with these things. Rosal Shalanta talks about this. This is, you can't go and say, oh, I'm going to give them grief and that's going to be mechaper them. The Torah does not allow that to be. Loisainu, finished. And usually the victim of the verbal abuse believes that the abuser is being honest. They're being straightforward. And when abuser's response does not correlate to the communication with the abuser, the victim of it tries again to express themselves more adequately so that maybe they'll understand them. And it's a vicious cycle, because very often they will not be understood. So another concept of what happens often with verbal abuse is that the interaction does not occur when anyone else is around. That is very, very common. Now, in the book called The Verbal Abuse of Relationship by Patricia Evans, she goes through various stories and scenarios. We're not going to go through all of them or even most of them. But the idea being, though, is that one of the concepts behind it is that if the one who is being abused believes that the abuser is being honest and sincere, they will remain a victim of that verbal abuse. Some common typical beliefs are: the victim believes that if they would be better able to express themselves and explain what they meant, then their spouse would not be angered by their questions or thoughts. Or the victim believes, I must have a problem with my own perceptions of things, because if I wouldn't have a problem, I wouldn't take things the wrong way, like my partner is saying that. And if I wouldn't be inadequate, or like the abuser says, I'm taking it wrong and making a big deal out of nothing, then I wouldn't feel so much pain and hurt. And one of the things is, and it's very tragic, that the partner, the victim, believes that just like they are sincere and caring, the man or wife who loves them as well and is also sincere and caring. And very often they are not, obviously. And the most important thing is, because they don't show this behavior to other people, the spouse believes that they're the abusive spouse is the same way at work or with friends, and they didn't make him mad. They had no complaints. So there must be something wrong with me. And they feel the victim of abuse feels a certain inadequacy, but they can't pinpoint exactly what that inadequacy is very often. And they seem to overlook the seriousness of their own suffering, of their own abuse. The victim believes that as soon as their spouse, the abuser, understands that angry blasts or sarcastic put-downs really hurt her, he would really, really stop. In this case, she does it in the female victim scenario. It could go the other way, of course. She reasons that she hadn't yet found a way to explain to him how much some of these things bothered her. And then when she finally does, he will stop. And very often, he will not stop. Many couples, what they try to do when there's a problem, they try to improve communication. But every time the victim tries to improve communication, there's always difficulties there. Every time that they try to share hopes and fears with the abuser, hoping for acceptance, hoping for intimacy, the more the abuser views her openness as weakness, the more superior he feels, and the colder he becomes, and the more power over, and look at the previous year and what we mean by power over is. So that is the consequences of verbal abuse. Regarding the feelings of it, it's very interesting. There's a line that says, a quote, "If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you." Which means is that there is feelings of the abuser and the abusive victim, especially, that needs to be aware of their feelings. They need to understand it. They have to understand they're in a different reality. The abuser is in the reality of reality one, what we called the power over, a lack of trust, lack of mutuality. And the reality of the one who is being abused is reality two, which is a power from within about a mutual connective relationship. So sometimes you hear, oh, you're making a big deal out of nothing, or you're taking it all wrong. Basically, they're defining the abuse victim's experience, and they believe him or her. And that's the essence of crazy making or psychological abuse. You have to recognize and honor your own feelings. If you feel hurt, yeah, some people get oversensitive, that is true. So we have to learn how to handle that. But if this is continuous, you have to acknowledge, I'm being hurt, I feel hurt, I need to understand why I feel hurt and I'm being hurt. And the idea being like this, the state of personal power, we're going to mention a few aspects of it, primary feelings that are healthy versus unhealthy, to recognize verbal abuse or psychological abuse. The first feelings are responsibility versus inadequacy. So we're stressing now again, healthy versus unhealthy feelings in each category, how a good relationship promotes the healthy thing, and the not good relationship, when there's verbal abuse, creates the other thing. In a healthy mutual relationship, there is a certain sense of healthy responsibility. If it's unhealthy, there's a feeling of inadequacy. What does responsibility mean? It's not a negative word. People say the word responsibility, also, and say, oh yeah, you have to do this, I have to do that. It's not really that. The feeling of responsibility calls forth the awareness of one's ability to achieve the desirable healthy state in which the spirit is nourished. Inadequacy is reverse. It calls forth the awareness and one's inability to achieve a desirable state, and the spirit is diminished. So usually the partners of verbal abusers feel responsible for themselves. They try to develop themselves. They try to learn. They try to grow. Often they're achievers, whether they're at home, whether they're at work, whether they're at school. And they may also, without realizing, feel that they're responsible for the quality of their relationship. In reality, they're not fully responsible. It's always a two-way street. For example, an abuse victim may believe they're responsible for the abuser's lack of understanding. They're responsible for angering him or her. She may believe that she's responsible for her communications, for how they were taken. And the abuser seems irritated. And she will try to figure out, well, what kind of things upsetted him and try to avoid them. And she feels responsible for his anger because he's accusatory. And so on and so forth. She made a fascinating experiment. The author of the book said that she was doing research for the book and she attended a social function. She met an acquaintance, a businessman in his 50s, a nice person. They were debating back and forth and they were discussing things. And so, and then she said that she was once at a discussion where she heard a man said, oh, well, all you women want this and all you women look this. He was talking down about women in general. And the 50-year-old businessman that she was talking to says, oh yeah, I saw that happen to women. And now the author agreed that sometimes that takes place, but there are times she said, to this 50-year-old businessman that they're being abused and they feel responsible for the abuse. So how is that so? So she did a test on this 50-year-old businessman. So she noticed, for example, he quickly was looking, it was by a dinner, some type of event, and he was looking at a table that had snacks on it. So she seized the moment. She saw him glance at the table that had snacks on it. She says to him, I'll give you an example. Why are you looking at the table when I'm talking to you? And she said it in a very angry, irritated, accusatory tone that abusers use. So she pretended to be like an abuser because she studied the subject. And the guy glanced at the table and she basically yelled at him. Why are you looking at the table when I'm talking to you? That intensity. And he turned to her and to her dismay, he said almost apologetically, oh, I'm sorry, I was just looking at the cookies at the table. Then the author apologized for didn't make it clear that the example was just an example and everything was well. But basically, he himself, the businessman, was surprised to have been easily hooked into accepting responsibility for apologizing for being berated. So you understand what happened here? He looked at the table innocently. She acted like an abuser, yelling at him, "Why are you looking at the table? I'm talking to you. Why are you looking at the table?" That's an abusive type of talk. And the businessman apologized. What was within him to apologize? The other person's being abusive. Excuse me. You know, I'm looking at the table because I, you know, whatever the reason. But I am, you know. But this apology, the tendency to want to apologize when being yelled at by somebody, is a natural reaction, but it's part of an abusive pattern. There's nothing wrong with apologizing when you actually do something wrong, or in a normal, healthy way. But there's excessive guilt and apology for things that have not your fault, or simply being human, is a problem. So when someone realizes they're being verbally abused, then they won't accept anymore the responsibility for their abusers of behavior. And she could ask for changes or choose freely to make the changes that she desires or he desires, to take responsibility for themselves, a personal power, and their spirit is nourished, and they could get out of this abusive type of situation. Bracha v'atzlacha.